Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. We're offering remarks by Dr. Stephen Smart during an Illinois Family Institute forum on the dangers of legal-assisted suicide. Our thanks to Pastor Mark Moore and Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove for hosting the forum. IFI and other life advocates are trying to stop pro-assisted suicide legislation in the General Assembly. It's why Dr. Smart's comments are so important and timely. Dr. Stephen Smart is a clinical associate professor of medicine at the University of Illinois College of Medicine and is in private practice at the Springfield Clinic in Peoria. He has a special interest in medical ethics and is the past president of the Peoria Area Christian Medical and Dental Associations. During this segment of Spotlight, he explains the deceptions surrounding assisted suicide.
There may be some who are torn by a feeling that this is something wrong, but also possibly maybe something good if properly controlled. Others may simply be unsure how to articulate the reasoning, to give arguments for why assisted suicide is a bad idea. Just as we have Christian apologetics, maybe this can be a form of assisted suicide apologetics or anti-assisted suicide apologetics, equipping us with some tools to better engage the debate with friends, family, even in just a small way. So let's make an attempt to reason through the debate on physician-assisted suicide that has been euphemistically labeled aid in dying, or in Canada, medical aid in dying. So opening with the primary arguments in favor of assisted suicide, a scenario is presented where a patient has a terminal illness, weeks or months to live, is suffering in pain, or severe pain is implicated, and she wishes to exercise her autonomy, remember that word, by orchestrating her own inevitable death on her own terms with what is called dignity. Those of us opposed to assisted suicide must acknowledge that this sounds, on the surface, both reasonable and compassionate. It's hard not to be empathetic when arguments are framed with personal stories of suffering and grief. Emotional pleas move us, but we also need reason. So pro-assisted suicide arguments really hinge on two things: autonomy and relief of suffering, supplemented, of course, with assurances of safeguards to prevent abuse while denying the so-called slippery slope. We can agree that autonomy and relief of suffering are both critically important, but I propose that well-meaning people, including many physicians, have been deceived. First, autonomy. This is a word that essentially means governance over one's own actions. It is a fundamental result of what we as Christians call free will. And in medicine, it specifically determines what treatment to accept versus what we wish to forego. It is the basis of informed consent so that patients understand risks and benefits in order to make a well-informed decision regarding their own health care. The problem is that autonomy can never be considered in isolation from the rest of medical ethics. What do I mean? Traditionally, ethical decisions in medicine have four domains: autonomy, beneficence, non-maleficence, and justice. Big words, but they simply mean allow informed decisions by the patient regarding their own care, do good, avoid harm, and do so overall with fairness. In this context, autonomy, or freedom to choose, needs to be tempered by whether our choices and actions will do good or do harm, not only in the immediate domain, but in a broader context. We see that autonomy does not mean I want, therefore I get, or simply doing as you please. Autonomy is limited when a patient's decisions harm themselves, others, or society. Think about it. If autonomy, radical autonomy, were king, there would be no principled way of denying any request. Physicians would have to grant anything, whether reasonable or unreasonable. As an everyday example, doctors frequently refuse patients' requests for antibiotics for a viral illness. There are risks of side effects for the patient and a risk of societal harm from bacterial resistance. By its own logic, using autonomy as the main argument for assisted suicide makes it inconsistent to deny it for virtually any reason. What about relief of suffering? Well, of course we're committed to relieve suffering as medical professionals. This is where good palliative care comes in. Dr. Sharon Quick, former classmate of mine and anesthesiologist, has testified in a number of states, but one of her quotes is that pain or inadequate symptom management should never be a reason for terminally ill patients to seek lethal drugs. Testimonies about patients with excessive pain or other symptoms at the end of life indicate that these patients had inadequate palliative care. Most dying patients are comfortable and do not seek legal drugs because of pain. A wish to die might really mean, I'm afraid, I'm a useless burden. Often this is a plea for help and reassurance of their value, not a true desire to kill themselves. Indeed, data from Oregon show that the top reasons for requesting assisted suicide were concerns about lost autonomy and control, impaired ability to participate in pleasurable activities, loss of dignity, and feeling as a burden. Let me ask you, who do these features remind you of but friends and family members with disabilities? While the dying patient may certainly have physical symptoms, such as pain, nausea, shortness of breath, etc., all of which are treatable, there is usually more psychological distress based on hopelessness, anxiety, depression, dependency, and sometimes even unresolved conflict. Knowing this, we see that relief of suffering is often just a restatement of autonomy. We feel a certain way, so we get to choose, and you, the medical profession, must oblige. We are the consumers, you are the providers. Now let's move to opposing arguments and problems with assisted suicide. If arguments in favor rest on autonomy and relief of suffering, the opposition to assisted suicide is largely based on ethics and then more practical problems. Ethics is the study of moral choices, or more simply, doing the right thing. The most consistent ethical traditions of medicine emphasize care and comfort. The prohibition on killing, dates back to the original Hippocratic Oath, written at a time that euthanasia was actually common. Intentionally ending a person's life is fundamentally inconsistent with our role as a healer. It is actually dangerous to combine these roles of healing with the role of killing. For a similar reason, the American Medical Association, or AMA Code of Ethics, doesn't allow physicians to participate in capital punishment. They state that despite one's personal opinion on capital punishment, as a member of a profession dedicated to preserving life when there is hope of doing so, a physician must not participate in a legally authorized execution. Now substitute the words assisted suicide for capital punishment, and the statement is equally true, or more so, since we are now talking about completely innocent lives. Some might argue that assisted suicide is ethically no different than withdrawing treatment on the basis of a patient's wish. After all, both paths lead to a patient's death. But these are not equivalent ethically or legally. Withdrawing treatment, when the intervention is ineffective or burdensome, is not assisted suicide, nor is it euthanasia, because it is not intended to cause death, but rather indicates the acceptance of death as a natural consequence of the underlying disease. The U.S. Supreme Court has already made this distinction when they concluded that there is no right to the assisted suicide in the U.S. At the same time, this does not prohibit aggressive pain control that may unintentionally hasten death as a type of a side effect. That may happen, but the ethical result hinges on intent, not just outcome. Likewise, the right to refuse treatment is simply freedom from an unwanted intervention. In contrast, it should be obvious that death by medication overdose is not a natural death. Euphemisms such as aid in dying and death with dignity seek to conceal this reality. Now, beyond the compelling ethical challenges of assisted suicide, there are also many practical problems. And with credit to Ryan Anderson, president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, these can be summarized under three categories: corrupting the culture of medicine, the failure of safeguards, and societal risks. We have already touched on how the culture of medicine might be corrupted while discussing medical ethics. We stated that medicine is devoted to healing, just like teachers are devoted to learning and clergy to things of God. The Hippocratic Oath proclaims, "I will keep the sick from harm and injustice. I will neither give a deadly drug to anyone who asks for it, nor will I make a suggestion to this effect." Human life need not be extended by every means possible, but intentionally taking a life allows the tools of healing to be used as those of killing.
Dr. Stephen Smart, during an Illinois Family Institute forum, that highlighted the dangers of legal-assisted suicide. After Time Out, Dr. Smart will explain how legal-assisted suicide is corrupting our good medical system.
Hail and well met. My name is Jenna.
I'm Kenna Rose.
And I'm Eliana.
We are three of the five hosts of the Self-Evident Podcast, a platform dedicated to speaking truths that were once self-evident, and our hope is that we do so in love.
We have seen a distinct lack of platforms talking about worldview issues and theology and just a lot of what's going on in the world from a perspective of speaking truth, but doing it in such a way that is loving. And so our hope is to be able to talk about these in such a way that
our peers can access it.
Right, absolutely. As well as interviewing a variety of people such as pastors, actors, theologians, directors, even some of our friends to glean wisdom from their own walks of life.
Yeah, so if you are in the Generation Z category, even if you're above that, or impressively, even if you're below that and you're listening to podcasts, good on you. We encourage you to stop by our platform at selfevidentpodcast.com.
Self-evident, speaking truths that were once self-evident and doing so in love.
Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight for this edition, highlights from an Illinois Family Institute forum outlining the dangers of legal-assisted suicide. Dr. Stephen Smart was one of the speakers at the forum, which was presented by IFI and hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Dr. Smart has a special interest in medical ethics and is the past president of the Peoria Area Christian Medical and Dental Associations.
There is also something special about the patient-physician relationship. Assisted suicide damages this relationship by reducing trust in doctors and their commitment to the health of their patients. Physicians have specialized knowledge, experience, and prescribing powers, while, on the other hand, illness makes patients vulnerable. In this inherently unequal relationship, ethical boundaries are necessary to protect both patients and the profession of medicine. This is more than speculation. Meet Catherine Judson. She brought her very ill husband to Oregon, expecting that he would get proper care. Instead, she overheard the doctor recommend use of the assisted suicide law, telling him that Catherine might be spared much pain if he used the law. Could Catherine ever trust her husband to an unknown medical professional again? Laws are also a teacher. They help shape what we believe and how we act. Social messages are sent. If someone is seriously ill, taking one's life now becomes something to think about. John Finnis of the University of Notre Dame Law School puts it this way. Now change the law and the professional ethic. Killing with intent becomes a routine management option. Oh yes, there are restrictions, guidelines, paperwork, but as nothing compared to our doctor's change in heart, professional formation, and conscience. Moreover, assisted suicide creates perverse incentives for insurance companies, as it will become a cost-effective solution to otherwise expensive health problems. For example, Barbara Wagner was denied coverage for a cancer treatment that had measurable success in prolonging life and easing cancer pain. The denial letter from the State of Oregon Health Plan stated that it would not cover that medication, but it would cover end-of-life care, including physician aid in dying. According to Mrs. Wagner, they will pay to kill me, but they will not give me the medication to try and stop the growth of my cancer. And in the UK, Baroness Mary Warnock, referred to as a leading British ethicist, has argued, if you're demented, you're wasting people's lives, and you're wasting the resources of the National Health Service. Safeguards. What about the alleged boundaries and safeguards to limit assisted suicide? First, even if you accept the argument for PAS, or assisted suicide, on the basis of autonomy and compassion, the legal protections are ineffective. Let's highlight a few of those problems. The organization Compassion and Choices, a pro-assisted suicide organization, keeps a list of friendly doctors for doctor shopping. Indeed, the median length of physician-patient relationships regarding Oregon's assisted suicide law, and this is 2023 data, has fallen to 6 weeks. Only 6 weeks. Most practitioners of assisted suicide in Oregon do not really even know their patients. Kate Chaney, an 85-year-old dementia patient, requested assisted suicide drugs and was originally denied by her private physician, but her daughter shopped for a doctor until she found one that wrote the prescription. The second physician ordered a psychiatric evaluation, which found that Kate was not competent to make that decision. So she was sent to another psychologist who deemed that she was. And the second psychologist noted the possibility, even, of coercion by the daughter. But Kate received the prescription regardless and died. Laws also don't specify if death need be imminent with or without treatment. There is actually a case of a patient who had been diagnosed with diabetes and who declined to take insulin, as he did not want to face the difficulty of living as a diabetic. Thankfully, his doctor denied his request for aid in dying. But despite the doctor refusing in this instance, the term terminal in assisted suicide bills has been interpreted in Oregon to mean with or without treatment. If the doctor had agreed, the patient would have had access to lethal drugs for a common, controllable illness. And some doctors do agree, as there are a small percentage of patients every year listed in Oregon's annual report that have diabetes as their underlying condition for the 6-month or less prognosis. Third, the only mental health criteria is being competent to make a decision. No other concerns about mental illness, such as depression. And depression is so common in terminally ill patients and treatable. Yet fewer and fewer patients are being referred for psychiatric evaluation. I used to quote a 5% number. That number is now down to only 1% of patients in Oregon. The last of the legal issues that we will mention tonight are that doctors are immune from all liability, even civil, as long as they acted in good faith, meaning that they were well-intentioned. Now, we all know that there are examples of negligence and worse malpractice in the world of medicine. Examples might be missing a cancer diagnosis or a serious surgical mistake. But with assisted suicide laws, there is no recourse, as long as the provider subjectively meant well, even on the basis of gross negligence by misdiagnosing a patient. As psychiatrist Aaron Cariotti relates, if assisted suicide is a good, why limit it only to a select few? Why put 6 months? Why make it terminal? If it's good for terminal illnesses with less than 6 months, why isn't it good for chronic illnesses that are a burden for years, decades? And why limit it to self-ingestion, a drink, when an IV injection is much more efficient? This is simply where the logic of assisted suicide takes you. Once the first assisted suicide laws are in place, there is inevitable loosening of the boundaries and the alleged safeguards. There are innumerable examples. In Canada, almost all aid in dying is now actually euthanasia, where a physician administers the lethal drugs by an IV. So now it's not assistance anymore in suicide, but a direct act of killing. Canada has also changed their law to allow aid in dying for depression. The enactment was recently delayed, but the procedures are being worked out. While Belgium and the Netherlands even allow euthanasia for infants and children, the list goes on. This is not a slippery slope, it's a cliff. Disability has also become a grounds for termination. Examples across the world include deaf twins going blind in Belgium, a transsexual who had operations gone bad, a blind woman, chronic anorexia, and even severe tinnitus. The forces behind assisted suicide in the U.S., Compassion and Choices in particular, know all of this. It is where they want to go. But strategically, they know that it will require small steps. So they argue for safeguards and limitations, for now. And then slowly over time, as a culture of acceptance grows, both within medicine and the wider community, they expand and expand the use. This is not conspiracy theory, not the slippery slope fallacy, but something that is playing out around the world. Indeed, the latest proposed law in California, SB 1196, hopes to remove the waiting period, change terminal illness to irremediable medical condition, include patients with dementia, and change self-ingestion or assisted suicide to IV administration, euthanasia. Lastly, as Ryan Anderson has also pointed out, assisted suicide compromises the family and our traditional obligations to the elderly. Not only will the temptation to view elderly or disabled family members as burdens rise, but the trend will be for the elderly and the disabled to view themselves as burdens. Instead of the solidarity of the community and true compassion, assisted suicide threatens to create cheap solutions by eliminating those perceived as socially and economically burdensome. Indeed, in the Netherlands, families have initiated the request for euthanasia more often than patients themselves. Even if effective, Legal safeguards would not prevent the moral message that some lives are simply not worth living. Eventually, the so-called right to die morphs into a duty to die, and that will be a sad day. Victoria Reggie Kennedy, the widow of the late Senator Edward Kennedy, campaigned against the bill that would have legalized assisted suicide in Massachusetts. I'm going to finish up with her own words. "When my husband was first diagnosed with cancer, he was told that he had only 2 to 4 months to live, that he'd never go back to the U.S. Senate, that he should get his affairs in order, kiss his wife, love his family, and get ready to die. But that prognosis was wrong. Teddy lived 15 more productive months. Because that first dire prediction of life expectancy was wrong, I have 15 months of cherished memories. Memories of family dinners and song fests with our children and grandchildren. Memories of laughter and, yes, tears. Memories of life that neither I nor my husband would have traded for anything in the world. When the end finally did come, natural death with dignity, my husband was home, attended by his doctor, surrounded by family and our priest. Mrs. Kennedy concluded that most people wish for a good death, surrounded by loved ones, perhaps with a doctor and or clergyman at our bedside. But with assisted suicide, what you get instead is a prescription for up to 100 capsules dispensed by a pharmacist, taken without medical supervision, followed by death, perhaps alone. This seems harsh and extreme to me," end quote. In conclusion, as we've seen, the main arguments in favor of assisted suicide are resting on autonomy and relief of suffering. Unfortunately, autonomy is taken to an extreme, while disregarding the other tenets of medical ethics. Meanwhile, the safeguards are illusory, the slippery slope inevitable, and the practice guarantees to corrupt the culture of medicine, endanger the weak and disabled, and compromise our families. Thank you.
Dr. Stephen Smart, during an Illinois Family Institute forum that outlined the dangers of legal assisted suicide. Our thanks to Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove, Pastor Mark Moore and his leadership team for hosting this important event. Please contact your state lawmakers. Urge them to vote no on assisted suicide. For names and phone numbers, click Officials Finder on the IllinoisFamily.org homepage. Please support the work of the Illinois Family Institute. All donations are tax deductible. To give, go to IllinoisFamily.org. Be sure to join IFI for our Marriage and Family Worldview Conference, Saturday, March 8th at Belmont Bible Church. To find out more, you can just click events at IllinoisFamily.org and go there to sign on for IFI email updates. Tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. And until next time, stay healthy, stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.